Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Gospel Tangents is supported by users like you. Please support us at gospeltangents.com or on Patreon. Looks like we have some shy people here, but go ahead and comment. Tell me who you are, where you are, and if you're watching on Facebook, YouTube, or X, formerly known as Twitter. Brandon Griffin, welcome. Hi. Looks like you're on YouTube, it looks like. So welcome, everybody. So I thought as a follow-up, Alabama Brandon, welcome. As a follow-up to the, well, maybe I'll do this first. Thomas Kirkham on YouTube, welcome. Somebody asked me a question about where Jesus Christ appeared exactly in the Kirtland Temple. And I said I would only be guessing. Well, I just happened to be listening to Casey Griffiths and Scott Woodward from the Church History Matters podcast. And Casey said that we know exactly where it was. It was on the first floor on the Melchizedek priesthood pulpits. And so he even went so far to say as, you know, if you go to Jerusalem, you can say, well, Jesus might have been here, and he might have been here, he says, but we know exactly where he was in the Kirtland Temple. So anyway, according to Casey, we know. So anyway, Melchizedek priesthood pulpits on the first floor. Now, this week we talked with Arish Ben Sassi from Tunisia, which was a lot of fun. She's the founder and president of Association Didon de Carthage, and they're kind of promoting a history of Tunisia and that sort of thing. And so it was a lot of fun. Philip Beale was there. And mainly due to, I've seen in a Facebook group, a South American model of the Book of Mormon. And of course I had why can't I remember his name? Let me see his face. Present on the South American model of the Book of Mormon, Potter, George Potter. And somebody had posted my episode in a South American Facebook group, people that proposed that. And they rejected Philip's trip, which I find kind of funny. And so I wanted to go into ocean currents and that sort of a thing. And maybe I will just share my PowerPoint from my Firm Foundation presentation from 2023. Really quickly, because I don't want to redo the whole thing, but let's see. Here we go. So you can see here, I'm just going to skip through some of these slides really quickly. Main categories of theory. We have internal theories, old world theories, new world theories, and to cover all the bases, Joseph made it up, which I'm not going to spend a lot of time on. And if you believe that, that's perfectly fine. I'm not going to argue with you. But I want to talk a little bit about old world geography. So for the most part, people pretty much agree Lehi came out of Jerusalem, ended up going down the Frankincense Trail to Yemen, took a left turn over to Oman, and people who believe in the Book of Mormon, I don't think there's anybody who disagrees with that at all. Once they got to Oman, that's where the disagreements arise. So we've got an African theory that Lehi landed in Ethiopia and Eritrea and this area here, which obviously would be a relatively short journey. So that seems like a possibility. You've got Sri Lanka over here. The Mezo folks basically think, and I'm going to talk about why I don't think this is, well, the first part's okay, that they hugged the coast of Oman, Pakistan, India, went up over to Thailand, over by the Malay Peninsula. So if you're a Malay fan, of course, that seems reasonable. And then I think I actually have a slide here. Yeah. Let's keep going here. Oh, here we go. Whoops, maybe I passed it already. I thought I had a better slide than that. But at any rate, oh, here we go. It's later on. So you can see from Oman, by India, through by the Malay Peninsula, Burma, that area. And then they basically have to jet across the Pacific Ocean. And I'm going to talk about why that's probably not likely. And so anyway, I'll give a heads up to, I don't know anyone that actually believes Sri Lanka. I like Malay. It's kind of a fun theory. But honestly, all of the theories have some serious problems. So let me dive back over here, and I want to share my screen here and talk a little bit about Philip Beale. Hopefully you've watched that. I don't want here. I'll just do this way, and then I can flip the way I want. So here's a picture of Philip Beale. So the interesting thing, so that's episode 718. It's from, let's see, does this say, November of 2022 was when I posted that. I recently talked to Philip, and here it is. He let me take a photograph of the ocean currents, and these have not changed for thousands of years. And so, of course, Philip's first trip was to circumnavigate Africa. And so he started it in Syria, went through the, I think it was the Suez Canal, and knowing that the ancient Phoenicians obviously had to get around that somehow. So they would have not had access to the Suez Canal, but they would have probably, according to Philip, trucked their boat over to the Red Sea and then down and over here. And so this is, of course, Yemen and Oman. And you can see it depends. He says it depends on the winds. So because they had some problems with their ship, sometimes the winds blow east, sometimes they blow west. And so because they had had some problems, they actually had to postpone for about 6 months because they got here at the wrong time of the year. But at any rate, they came down the East African coast, ended up in Cape Town, hit some really severe storms here, blew them back actually 18 miles, ripped the sail like it was a really bad storm, put up a new sail, and they continued on. And like I said, their goal was to circumnavigate Africa, and so they were planning on hugging the coast. But as you can see, when they get around Cape Town, the currents and the winds just naturally take you up to, you can see here, depending on where you are, North South America, into like Cuba and the Dominican Republic and those islands there, and to Florida. Well, on Philip's first voyage, he didn't want to do that. He didn't want to go to Florida. But he said he was only 300 miles from Florida just by accident, because that's what the currents and the winds just take you there. And so he got the boat turned around, and they sailed back towards Africa and through the Straits of Gibraltar, through the Mediterranean Sea, and back to Syria. So he was able to accomplish his circumnavigation goal of Africa to show that the ancient Greek scientist and philosopher Herodotus had mentioned that a group had done that in 600 BC. So then 10 years later, in 2019, I think it was, he did the opposite journey, journey, that's what it was. And so he's once again started in Syria. This time he sails along North Africa, and this is where Tunisia is. Arish said, if the ancient Book of Mormon character Mulek had done this, he would have probably had to stop along Tunisia here, which Philip Beale did. I think Philip actually had some repairs in Algeria, and Algeria does not like outsiders, and so they made him stay in port until he got his repairs done. But anyway, went through the Straits of Gibraltar, and you can see on this map, you kind of head down the African coast and ride along these wonderful currents, and that's basically what Christopher Columbus did and what Philip Beale did, and once again ended up easily in Florida. This is February of 2020, and as you all know, that was not a good time to visit Florida because COVID hit and the U.S. basically shut down. And so Philip docked his boat in Fort Lauderdale, and then they just said, you got to leave the country. So he flew back to England. But anyway, he demonstrated with a 600 BC ship twice, mostly by accident, because he didn't know anything about the Book of Mormon or Mormons, that you can either circumnavigate Africa and go to Florida, or you can go this route here. And it's the second trip, that this was only 9 months. The first one took him 2 years and 2 months. It was a long time. But the second trip, he said, was relatively easy. You know, I mean, if you think about it, Columbus sailed with, what, three ships at least? And the Nina, the Santa Maria Pinta, I can't remember. Anyway, so Philip did it with one, with a crew of about nine, and said, I mean, I don't want to say it was easy. I'm sure it was hard, but relatively easily in a 600 BC ship right to Florida. Well, this kind of contradicts the narrative of both the Meso model and the South American model that think there was a Pacific crossing. And I remember asking Philip specifically about this because, and I've got a map here, if you see, if they went through Malay, Burma area, maybe North Australia here, there is this Pacific equatorial countercurrent that you can see here. And it looks really nice because it looks like it would take you right to Guatemala, which would be where Mezzo people think. And also, you know, you can kind of go either north or south. You could go to South America, Chile, Peru, that area. The problem is this countercurrent only goes at about one knot, and you can think of about a knot as like a mile per hour. And so, so yes, there is an equatorial countercurrent, but it's super slow, 1 mile an hour. And he says the winds are, which you're depending on, are going to be blowing against you more than that 1 mile an hour current. And so if you look at these currents, the currents are always going from west to east. Am I saying that right? The rule is you always want to go west. And so the winds are going against you, the currents are going against you. It was funny in the South American group, one of the reasons that they rejected Philip Beale's option was because you would have to go around not only the Cape of Africa, but the Cape of Good Hope in South America. And if you'll notice, Cape Town is more north than the tip of South America. And so you already remember Philip ripped his sail. Like, these are really rough seas. And if you're going even closer to Antarctica, these are horrendously bad seas. And he thinks it just can't be done. So I would agree with the South American proponents. I don't think that it's feasible to go around both the African Cape and the South American Cape. Those, especially around South America, those seas are simply too rough. But Philip almost went to Florida by accident. And so this seems like an extremely likely route. And John Lefgren is calling me right now. Here, I'm going to answer this just 1 second. John, I'm on my live stream and we're talking about Philip Beale. So I will keep talking. But if you want to join me, come on YouTube or Facebook and you can join the crowd here. We're talking about Philip Beale, so you'll love this. Just go to facebook.com/gospeltangents and go to my page, or youtube.com/gospeltangents, and it's a live stream. Okay, thanks. I know John's been trying to get a hold of me today, and I've been busy both times. So anyway, hopefully he'll join. So the idea... Well, and another thing that Philip told me, if you're going from Oman to Florida around Africa, that's half the distance of going from Oman around India. And yeah, you can hug the coast like they said, that's fine. But once you get into, you know, here... The only real way, you can go either way around Australia, I guess, but you're going to hit some seriously treacherous currents in around the South Pole, basically. And he doesn't think those are survivable, okay? Now, the other option is to go up by Japan and up through the Bering Straits, up by Alaska. That is also an option. Once again, extremely rough seas, very difficult to do. And so you can just see that the currents are going against you unless you go really far north or really far south. And so the idea, for those of you who may be Baja folks, this is just a really rough journey, and it's twice the distance that Philip Beale did it. So it's going to take twice as long. And it took Philip 2 years. Apparently, when the ancient Greeks circumnavigated Africa, it took them 3 years. So Philip did it in 2/3 of the time, and it was still 2 years. So, you know, and the Book of Mormon doesn't really, it just says many days. So, you know, and let me just add this really quickly. So most people think Lehi followed around Africa and to, once you get over here into, say, the Gulf of Mexico, you do have some ability to hit anywhere in the Gulf of Mexico. So Florida all the way to Guatemala. So if you want to say that Lehi landed in Guatemala on the from the Gulf side, yeah, that's an option. You could hit South America potentially, but it's going to be on the east coast of South America, probably not the west coast. And so it just doesn't seem very feasible to hit the west coast of North or South America unless you're going really far north or really far south. And those are very treacherous seas. And like I said, Cape Town's not as far south as, I don't know what the southernmost, is it Buenos Aires in South America? I'm not sure. But anyway, those can be some seriously rough seas. So I just wanted to add that little thing that, you know, an Atlantic crossing is half the distance. And if you go through the Mediterranean Sea, it only took Philip 9 months. That's, a lot of people think Mulek did that. And I've heard that even the Mezo people think that that the Mulekites probably came through the Mediterranean Sea and maybe over here. So anyway, just wanted to share that. So let me stop for a minute and see if you guys have any comments or questions. Good to see you, Deb, on YouTube. And maybe John Lefgren has showed up. Hopefully we'll see. So John, if you're there, give us a comment and give us a wave. So that was the main thing I wanted to share with regards to ocean currents. Was there anything else I had here? Let me just double check. I guess I could briefly go through my geography theories. I've already done this once, so I don't feel like I need to do it again. But heck, maybe I'll do this really quickly, just for a reminder. It's easier to do entire screen, and then I can go where I want. Okay, so jumping, maybe I'll make this full screen here, if I remember how. Okay. Talked about that. We talked a little bit about geology. Check out my Jerry Grover video. I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. We've talked a little bit about DNA. That's a big problem for all of the theories. Basically. Let's see. I've talked about the frankincense trail. John Hamer doesn't think Nahum is a bullseye. There's a couple of ports in Yemen, Oman, that George Potter and the Ashtons, Warren P. Ashton, have identified as possible ports. Internal theories, most people think it looks like that. We've talked about Philip Beale. I guess there was a theory by Blair Bryant, he's a member of the Community of Christ, that believes the Jaredites crossed China, which of course is helpful for the DNA problem. And it says that it took him 344 days. You know, this is going up by Japan and up through those rough seas. Just as a reminder, for those of you who remember the Fukushima earthquake and nuclear meltdown from a few years ago, after the earthquake, a lot of boats and balls and things floated across, unmanned, across the Bering Straits and ended up in California. So, you know, if the Jaredites, you know, they sounded like a little bit like a floating submarine, whereas they had the, you know, they could open the top and the bottom, and if there was water, they would plug it back up, and if there wasn't. So you could float that way and get to California or Baja or the west coast of Mexico, because a lot of stuff did from Japan, and it wasn't piloted, and it took about a year. So, yeah, that's possible. Very rough seas. And then we've talked about this. This is just a problem, because the Journey of Faith DVD just doesn't make sense here. You know, the idea is you're stopping all along the way, you're resupplying, you're getting water and food and everywhere. But once you hit the Pacific Ocean, you got a long way to go without any pit stops, without really resupply. And the winds are against you, the currents are against you, so this just doesn't seem plausible. Talked a little bit about the Sri Lanka theory. The more I know about this, I know Casey Curran found it, and it was like a comment on a webpage. I don't know how serious this is, but anyway. It's interesting. He's got it on his website, Book of Mormon online, BookofMormon.online, which is a cool website. And so anyway, the melee theory, we've talked a little bit about that. I like it because, as far as all the anachronism problems, horses, elephants, silk, gold, silver, barley, wheat, it's got all of them. Problem, and it's a big problem. It's not in America. So, you know, I suppose an angel can do whatever he wants and take it somewhere. But, I mean, it's a fun theory. I got a couple links there. The other thing, Simka Yakovovich thinks there's a story about ancient Israelites going to Thailand, Malay, Burma, of that area. I haven't heard of any DNA tests that have confirmed that, but there's a legend, basically, that kind of supports that. African theory, I mentioned this one a little bit earlier, Ethiopia, Eritrea. The nice thing about this, it's a lot shorter journey. To me, a better theory would be in South Africa, you have the Lemba tribe, and they actually have DNA evidence, but that's in South Africa, not East Africa. I do know I have another commenter, goes under the handle Red Fight Blue. He thinks this story about Herodotus Herodotus tells a story about ancient Phoenicians circumnavigating Africa. He thinks that's Lehi, and I keep telling him, you got to write a book if you're going to be serious about that. So I guess there's that one. Mbe Melikan, he's not very credible. If you read his information, he says that the Mormon missionaries taught him in the Mormon temple, which doesn't make any sense. But he's not really tied to any restoration groups, so he's definitely got some credibility problems. But he's written a book, 80 Reasons Why the Book of Mormon is an African Bible. I think if you're going to go with Africa, at least move it to South America. That's where you get a DNA link. So, and I haven't studied it deeply, but it does seem like Africa's full of gold and silver and elephants and horses and everything. So, I mean, from that point of view, I suppose Africa could be plausible. And then we move on to New World geography, the hemispheric model. I don't know anybody that supports that now, but that's definitely what the early saints thought. They thought the narrow neck of land was around Panama. You'll notice that's actually an east-west crossing there instead of north-south. So that's a little bit of a problem. And the distances just don't match. Baja, I need to talk to David Rosenvall. I emailed him a while back and said, so you can share this, Deb, with Paul, that he should present on our Monday Book of Mormon Perspectives meeting. But he said he was busy, and I need to hit him up again. He's got an interesting. I like it because it's a north-south peninsula. In some ways, it makes a lot of sense. One of the problems is, it does have horses, elephants, plants from 10 to 20,000 years ago, which is the Ice Age. And so those, unless you think Lehi lived 20,000 years ago, that's a big problem. But, you know, there's kind of growing support among scholars. I know Brant Gardner said nobody lived there, and not the populations mentioned in the Book of Mormon. He thinks they could have maybe landed in Malay and moved over to Mezo, so that kind of ties in with there. New York Great Lakes theory, this one's not very scholarly. You do have several narrow necks of lands between the Great Lakes. This is, I guess, a possibility. I don't think it's a very good theory. I've got some links here that you can look at. He kind of mentions the Iroquois, but the Iroquois don't date to the right time period. This is a sore spot for some people. Book of Mormon never mentions snow. You would think if it was in the Great Lakes region, they would mention snow at least once. Besides Isaiah's, she'll be cleansed white as snow. The Book of Mormon doesn't talk about great snowstorms or anything. And you would think that would be the case. Delmarva Peninsula, interesting theory. I talked with, I can't remember her name. I've got it right here. Laura Hathaway, I talked about that with her. It's got DNA problems, elephant, horse problems, plants problems. And it definitely needs more research. But I do like it. It is a peninsula. It does seem plausible. Jamestown, is that the city that was abandoned? It's close by, so it seems like a possibility. But it's got more work to do. South American model. Now, I guess I should mention there are multiple South American models. I've got this on here. This is the Venice Pritis, and I think his name is Edward Cokerhans. They think that the Amazon River flooded, and so if this is true, which is apparently was 18 million years ago, you've got a nice little narrow neck of land here in Chile, Peru area. Timeline's a bit off. I did talk to George Potter. He doesn't believe in this model. He's a South American proponent, but he doesn't think, you know, the timeline's way off. 18 million years, it's just way off. In that Facebook group, they're big fans of Vanus Britus and Coker Hans, and they don't really have a good explanation for this other than, you know, the Book of Mormon says 2,000 years ago there were changes in the land, so maybe it's not 18 million years ago, but I just don't think that's a very convincing argument. It's got DNA problems and everything else. Heartland model, of course, they're big Philip Beale fans. And I should also mention there's more than one model. You know, I talked with Jay Mackley, and he doesn't like this model because he agrees with the Mezo people in the fact of a limited geography model. So he has created a limited geography model along the Mississippi River. And so to me, that's a plus. But this is kind of Rod Meldrum, Wayne May, and Jonathan Neville. And they're all slightly different, but this is roughly kind of the area that they cover. And it's a lot bigger. I know talking with Jonathan, he said, well, if you're traveling on rivers, and that's, you've got the Missouri, the Ohio, Mississippi River, and there's way more rivers back east than there are here in the west, that you can travel farther than the Sorensen model claims. But anyway, I guess that's a little bit of a debate, but I lean more towards Sorensen's limited geography model than this. A lot of the same pros and cons. Here's the Sorensen model. One of the big knocks, I've got Sorensen and Garth Norman. Garth Norman is below John Sorensen's on top. They overlap quite a bit. They swap the Grijalva and the Umecinta rivers, and they have their reasons for doing that. It also has the Yucatan Peninsula in that, but you'll notice, especially on Garth's map below, there's a lot fewer people, a lot fewer sites on the Yucatan than closer to Guatemala. A lot of people note that this is east-west orientation instead of north-south, and I would have to agree. If you're a Yucatan guy, north-south, but you've got the population problem. Got some links to his books there. And then, Yucatan, I've been talking a little bit about that. And then Panama, this was something Casey found. Once again, it's much more narrow. It's not north-south, it's east-west, so that's a problem. And Joseph made it up. Clearly, it's a possibility. Not very interesting to talk about, but anyway. So, all right. John Lefgren, welcome. Good to see you. Tom Hawks, Pleasant in Arizona, Canadian Anglican, watching from Brampton, Ontario. Are you related? Here, I'm going to pop this up here just because I can. I know that Christina Rossetti is getting married to an Anglican priest. Would that be you or just another Canadian Anglican? let us know. So comment here, Tom Hawks says, both oceans were accessible. Talking to many old navigators, most of the Pacific Islands all looked as crossing from New Zealand to Tahiti to Hawaii were all accessible. I do know that, you know, and I talked about this in my presentation last year with Thor Heyerdahl, it does seem like travel from South America to the Hawaiian Islands is possible, and the sweet potato from South America did end up in the Pacific Islands, but going the other way is a lot harder. So they must have figured it out. But so I'm not saying it's not impossible, but it seems much less likely in my opinion. And Brandon Griffin, it actually happened on Kolob. Okay, that's a funny joke. What is your view on Book of Mormon geography? They have all of the theories. I like to study it. All of the theories have serious, serious problems. And I'm open to all of them, but I acknowledge they all have major problems. And I like Melee just because it's fun and it's kind of out of the box. But it has problems too. Tom Hawks, every time I click on these, I can't read it. Australia, mummified plants are in Peru mummies. Oh, I wasn't aware of that one. So, you know, if you guys have more information on these, even in Australia, especially if they're going from Australia to South America, I'd be interested in that and in whatever you guys have. So let's see here. What else? I guess I usually go an hour. So you guys, if you want to keep talking, you're going to have to ask more questions. But I'm out for all of the stuff I was planning to present. So anyway, we'll keep it nice and short, I guess. Just to let you know about what's coming up over the next couple of weeks. I've mentioned George Potter a couple of times. We've got Easter coming up, and so I've got a couple of interviews, one with George Potter, which I recorded months ago, but I thought, I'm going to save this for Easter. He thinks he's found the real Mount Sinai. If you look, just like Book of Mormon geography, nobody knows where Mount Sinai really is. And I think there's another woman named Vivica Ponten from, I want to say Norway, perhaps Sweden. Maybe I'll have to find that video. But they make a case for a mountain in Saudi Arabia near the land of Midian, which makes a lot of sense because where did Moses flee after he killed the Egyptian? He went to the land of Midian, which is on the west coast of Saudi Arabia. So it would make sense that Mount Sinai might be nearby. I think everybody who studies like the Exodus and that sort of thing, you know, it was Constantine's mother, I think, Helena, who proclaimed that Mount Sinai is on the Sinai Peninsula. There's the Mount St. Catherine's Mosque, or not mosque, there's a Catholic monastery, that's what I was looking for, that is at the base of what's called Mount Sinai, but it doesn't seem to match any of the biblical characteristics. So that's going to be a fun interview. We're going to get into that with George Potter. And this coming week, I've got an interview with Eric Huntsman and Deidre Green. They've written a book, which I should have brought with me, but it's in another room that I'm reading, about the atonement. And, you know, obviously atonement's tied with Easter. And so they'll be this coming week. And so we'll have a couple weeks of Easter coming up here. I'm going to read. It's hard for me to read and talk, so I'll just pull this up here. Tom Hawks says the Smithsonian Natural History Museum has a display of German pre-Japanese pottery in South America using the Japanese current unknown until World War II. Well, Tom's onto something. I'm not familiar with that, but that's interesting. Let's see. Canadian Anglican said he's not Christina Rossetti's fiance. He's still single, but welcome. And what if they came to Canada and entered the USA through Canada? Honestly, that's reasonable because in my interview with Hugo Perego, we were talking about DNA, but that was one of the points he brought up. You know, the Vikings came from Europe over to Iceland and Greenland and ended up in eastern Canada through the St. Lawrence Seaway. There's a settlement. I'm trying to remember when this was. It was before Columbus. I don't remember off the top of my head when that was. I want to say 400 AD, if I remember right. So it's a little bit after Book of Mormon times. But those settlements are still in Canada. The interesting thing is, Hugo brought it up and says, why isn't there Viking DNA in Canada? There's none. But we have physical settlements where the Vikings landed. And apparently the Vikings took some of the Native Americans from Canada back to Greenland and Iceland, and their DNA shows up, Native American DNA shows up there. And so so clearly there was an Atlantic crossing there that the Vikings did, and it's interesting that we have no Viking DNA in Canada, despite evidence that they were there. And so, you know, that's been the big knock on the Book of Mormon. Hey, where's the DNA evidence? And he says, hey, the Viking DNA evidence disappeared too. I did talk to Thomas Murphy about that, and he says, yeah, but at least we have Native American evidence somewhere. And so, yeah, it's kind of an interesting thought there. Let's see. Brandon Griffin has a comment. What if the voyage across the ocean was a myth like much of the Old Testament and they really walked across like the DNA says? Certainly a possibility. And in fact, that's what, well, Hugo wouldn't agree with you on the myth part. But, you know, there is question about did they walk across. That seems to be because, you know, with the Ice Age, the Aleutian Islands was a land bridge. And as most current DNA science says, yeah, the Asians walked across 10,000 years ago. Book of Mormon proponents are going to say, well, that's true. There were Native Americans here, ancient Asians. And so the Book of Mormon people were so small that, like the Vikings, their DNA disappeared. And so, yes, this Beringia crossing, that's what the science says. So absolutely, I don't know if I can guess this, but Brandon, I'm guessing you're saying that the Book of Mormon's not historical. That's fine. That's a way to look at it. Yeah, Hugo's point was DNA can disappear and has disappeared. I do know there was a mummy found in Peru. I think it was a girl about 15 years old that was human sacrificed and then frozen for a long time, at least 500 years, maybe more. I'd have to look up that article again. But her DNA is not found among Native Americans. And so Ugo and Thomas and Simon will argue about the reasons for that. But yes, it does seem possible that DNA can disappear. And then Brandon added another comment here. I believe it's historical, but I'm just throwing out an interesting theory. Yeah, certainly possible. And, you know, there are lots of people, especially among my Communion of Christ friends, that believe that the Book of Mormon is scripture, but it's not historical. John Hamer would go to say it's historical fiction. So it's one way to resolve the issue, I'll say that. So, and I agree with the science. So, all right. Any other comments or questions you guys want to throw out there? So, if not, we'll end a little bit early. And if you have any questions that you want to talk about next week, I'm going to try to focus a little bit more on Easter, since Easter's coming up here. And so throw me some Easter questions. And if you have any questions, like I know last week somebody asked about where Jesus appeared in the Kirtland Temple, and I didn't know, but I found out this week. So, and maybe I should make a plug for Church History Matters. Casey Griffiths, a former guest, and Scott Woodward are doing that. They're both BYU professors. And they're diving in deep. They're trying to tackle a lot of topics. The funniest thing about that was they had published their first, or they had recorded their first episode about the Kirtland Temple before the sale. And so they added a little blurb in there. Hey, we didn't know this was going to be sold. So anyway, that was kind of interesting. So anyway, thanks everybody. Thank you, Corey. And we'll save this for next week. So thanks again for listening. And send me your Easter questions and I'll see what I can do. If they're too hard, I'll ask Dan McCollin. So thanks a lot. Appreciate everything. Thanks for listening, and I hope you to continue to enjoy Gospel Tangents. Consider becoming a Patreon or go to gospeltangents.com/shop and you can get a cool tie, a hat, or even a nice mug. You can also get a sweatshirt, so check it out at gospeltangents.com/shop.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.